Okay, we're starting here at the bottom of Tzadi Zayin Amud Bet. After the Mishnah just said that Ayakor Rebbe Sefer Ali Skopa, he's reading a sefer, a scroll on the threshold. V'nit galgala sefer miyado, and it rolled out of his hand. One side of it rolled out of his hand. The other side is still in his hand. Golo etzlo, and he can roll it back in. Now the Gemara wants to know what exactly is that situation where he's sitting on the threshold, which is Hayiskopa Hechidomi. What's the situation? What exactly is the iskopa? Ilei ma iskopa reshut yachid. If the iskopa itself is a reshut yachid, which means that it's 10 tfachim high by at least 4x4 tfachim wide, vekama reshut arabim, and in front of it sits the reshut arabim, velo gazrina and dimel nafil va'ate le'atuye, why wouldn't we be gozer the fact that if it falls out of his hand completely, he would be bringing it in from Reshut Rabim into Reshut Yachid. Mani, who's an author of such a position where we don't worry about you carrying from Reshut Rabim into the Reshut Yachid, even though you're still holding on to the object? So that'd be Rabbi Shimon, who we found in our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, we had three opinions in the next case in the Mishnah, which was Hayakore Barosh Agag. He's reading on top of the roof, and then it rolls down to the Reshut Rabim. Can you roll it back? The first opinion is the Tanakama, that it has to be above 10 tfachim off the ground. The second opinion was Rabbi Yehuda, who says as long as it's a malo achut, if it's at least a string's worth off the ground, then you can roll it back. And then you have Rabbi Shimon's opinion, which is even if it's lying on the ground down below, you can roll it back. So we see that Rabbi Shimon does not mind that if you're in Reshut Yachid, and the object rolls out to Reshut Rabim, that you're able to roll it back to yourself. So if you suggest that this iskopa in the ratio of the Mishnah is a Reshut Yachid, then Rabbi Shimon must be the author of that position. Tamar, kol davar shu mishum shvut, inu mei bifnei kitvei HaKodesh. He suspends any din derabanan when it comes to protecting kitvei HaKodesh or taking care of kitvei HaKodesh. Which is just interesting. Topically, when you talk about kitvei HaKodesh, just mean yana diyoma, because this is Erev Shabbat Parshat Chukat, which is brought down in Shulchan Aruch as a fast day. We say in the keynote, actually on Tisha B'Av, we discussed this. The Maharal Mirutenberg wrote one of the keynote that we say on Tisha B'Av of the burning of the Talmud. And it was 24 cartloads of Gemarot and Jewish books that were burnt on this day. And they were koveya the fast day based on the Rishonim at the time that they had dreams that it was associated with Erev Parshat Chukat, and that Zot Chukat HaTorah, this is the chok, this is the decree from heaven that these books be burnt, and therefore became a fast day over Kitvei HaKodesh. You see the importance or the devastation in their day when they didn't have printers, they didn't have a way to replicate the Gemara. 24 loads of Gemarot was a ton of work, was a world of information, Gemarot, that were lost in that burning. Over here we see the Gemara being, or Rav Shimon being makpid about this, that ain't devaro made b'fnei kitvei HaKodesh, that we don't have a din derabanan stand before kitvei HaKodesh. You see how important it is in their day, handwritten kitvei HaKodesh, which was the only form of mesorah that they had for the Torah Shebichtav, that was so important. Important enough that we're willing to suspend the Surah Derabanan. Just as a sidebar, since it's me and Yonah Dioma. So, Ema Seifa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Afilu Enu Misulak Min Aretz, Ela Melo Achut, even if it's off the ground, just a string's worth, Golulo Etzlo, Rabbi Shimon Omer, and Rabbi Shimon concludes at the end of our Mishnah, Afilu Baretz Etzma, Golulo Etzlo, and then you can roll it back, even if it's on the ground below. That will turn out to our Mishnah be structured like this. Reisha of a Sefer Rabbi Shimon. The first statement in the Mishnah with Rabbi Shimon. The last statement in the Mishnah with Rabbi Shimon. Mitziyata Rabbi Yehuda. And then in between you have the position of Rabbi Yehuda, which doesn't seem to be a great structure for a Mishnah. I'm Rabbi Yehuda in. Yep, in Ochanami. Reisha of a Sefer Rabbi Shimon. Mitziyata Rabbi Yehuda. That is the structure of the Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon in the beginning, Rabbi Shimon in the end, and Rabbi Yehuda in the middle. So that's the first answer to this iskopa question, is that we're talking about iskopat reshut yachid. The author of this position is Rabbi Shimon, who's contained later in the Mishnah, the last opinion in the Mishnah as well, who says that even when something rolls out to reshut rabim, you can roll it back in to the reshut yachid as long as you're machzik in it, and it's kitvei HaKodesh, where we suspend the nisur derabanan, where a good b'yodo, where you're still holding it, that you can roll things back in. Rabba Omar, Hocha Biskopa Hanidreset Askinan. Talking about an active thoroughfare. Umishum Bizayon Kitvei HaKodesh Shorubanan. And here, there was a particular dispensation, again, because of Kitvei HaKodesh, but here we're really afraid of the fact that the Kitvei HaKodesh are going to get ruined if you have to leave them in place. If you leave them there, they're just going to get what's called run over. They're going to be stomped on, stepped on, and ruined. So because of that, we gave a special dispensation to bring it back in, and that would make it divrei hakol. So it's reshut hayachid, but it's a place where rabim, there's enough people that walk over there, and that's why we let you bring it in. Rabbi Yehuda, even though in the latter half of the Mishnah says that it has to be off the ground in order for you to roll it back in, that's only in circumstances where the Kitvei HaKodesh are safe when you flip them over. But over here, where the Kitvei HaKodesh are not safe when you flip them over, there even Rabbi Yehuda would give you such a dispensation. So Rabbo does two things. First, he says that the first piece of the Mishnah is Divrei HaKol. It's not just Rabbi Shimon. And number two is, he explains that the Heter has to do with the fact that it's a makom and nidreset. It's a place that it's an active thoroughfare, and that's what gives a dispensation, not the simple fact that it's, you're holding on to it from Rishut HaYechid to Rishut HaRabim. Then, Eitvei Abaye. So Rabba's Talmud Abaye then challenges him and says, Toch, Dalet Amod, Golulo, it's low. Chutz the Dalet, Chufko Alaktav. So Rashi says, Lo Yadin An Hecha. I don't know where this is from. But the Gemara is quoting a Braita. Contextually, we understand by his quoting it that it must be referencing our Mishnah. And our Mishnah, and based on the case of Iskopa and in front of it, Rishut HaRabim, it says that only if it rolled out within 4 amot can you bring it back in. But if it rolled more than 4 amot away from you, even though you're still holding it, then Hofko Alaktav. Then you have to flip it onto its written side and leave it there. Via Mark Biskopa Nidresita Skinan. If you think we're talking about an active thoroughfare, Mali toch dalaramot, mali chutz the dalaramot. It shouldn't make a difference how far the sefer is, how far it's rolled out. The problem, obviously, when it being within 4 amot and outside of 4 amot is, then you're entering into an additional possible problem in Rishut HaRabim, which is being mavir chifetz dalaramot Rishut HaRabim. So not only do you have a problem moving from Rishut HaRabim to Rishut HaYachid, you also have the possibility of moving it within Rishut HaRabim dalaramot. So there you're faced with the possibility of two Dine Doraita that you could possibly violate if you get it wrong here, if it falls out of your hand. So over there, we didn't have the dispensation. But within Dalet Amot, we do have the dispensation. But if you say that the whole dispensation is premised on the fact that it's a Makom and Nidreset, it's a place that's an active thoroughfare, then it should be irrelevant how far away it is, but it's all about protecting the Kitvei HaKodesh here. And we're not going to let you just flip it over. Flipping over is not going to do anything here. It's going to get stepped on, it's going to get ruined that way. So because of that, Abai says that Rabbo's suggestion doesn't make so much sense. And now we have Abai's suggestion, which should be familiar somewhat from the beginning of the Gemara Shabbat, which is Elam Rabbi, Ocha Biskopat, Carmelit Askinan. Here we're dealing with the threshold that is a Carmelit. Rishut Rabim, Overet Lefaneha. And you have a Rishut Rabim that's in front of it. Now, Skobat Carmelit would require it to be more than 3 tefachim high. More than 3 tefachim high, otherwise it's batel to the Rishut HaRabim. It's what we call aras michtohi. It's the topography, the ups and downs of the Rishut HaRabim. Anything within 3 tefachim is not inconvenient for people to walk on, and would have been batel to the Rishut HaRabim. So it must be higher than 3 tefachim, but lower than 10 tefachim. Higher than 3 tefachim to get away from Rishut HaRabim. Lower than 10 tefachim, so it doesn't become a Rishut HaYochid. And then it has to be 4 by 4 tefachim. So less than 4 by 4 tefachim, it becomes a makom tour, and there's nothing to discuss. So it has to be between 3 and 10 tefachim, and 4 by 4. 9 might also be a problem that we've seen before, which is that when you have something that's 9 tefachim high, it's good b'katefalav. It's a good place for people to put their loads down and to change them in the Rishut HaRabim, and then it might become a part of the Rishut HaRabim again, and we have a din of Rishut HaRabim. But assume now that it's between 3 and 9 tefachim high, 4 by 4, so that's a karmelit. Now, karmelit aids us a little bit because now we're only dealing with a Rishut Dirabanan. So even if something went wrong here, you could only possibly be in violation of a Din de Rabanan, which is you're moving from Rishut HaRabim into a Carmelit. So because of that, we have more room to maneuver. And that's what Abaye says now, which is Toch Dal Ramot Din Nefilu Maiti Le'ilu Ati Lidei Chiyuv Chatat Shari Le'i Rabonon. Now I understand the distinction between 4 Amot and not 4 Amot. If it's within 4 amot, then you can't be in violation of a din d'oraita. You simply have a Rishut HaRabim to Carmelit. That's a din d'rabbanan. That's why they were matir there. Chutz la'arba amot. If you're outside of the 4 amot, di ma'itilei. There, if you bring it in, ati l'dei chiyuv chatat, there's a distinct possibility that you'll end up with a chiyuv chatat. Lo shorilei rabbanan. The rabbanan were not matir in this case. Now, This is not so simple, because if he really carries it from the Reshut Rabim into the Carmelite, it really does not matter that he traverses four amot in the Reshut Rabim, because then he doesn't have an akira and anacha in the Reshut Rabim. So the arba amot are only relevant if he starts in the Reshut Rabim and stops in the Reshut Rabim. Despite that fact, the Gemara leaves this alone and says, okay, we have a chashash here of this dalet amot. Just saying that it's not so straightforward that this dalet amot automatically is going to end up in a din d'oraita. It's very possible, especially if he's in the Carmelite and that's where he wants it to come, that you won't end up in a din d'oraita. But at least there's a possibility. Yochi toch dalet amot nami nigzor. Why don't we also go there within four amot? Dilma ma'al mirshut rabim mirshut yachid. Maybe he'll take it from the Reshut Rabim to the Reshut Yachid. Because it's out of the Reshut Rabim, he'll pick it up, and he'll walk back into the house. And now he'll move from Reshut Rabim into Reshut Yachid. Yeah, he's on the Iskopa, but why does the Iskopa help? So that's what he says, V'chi Tema, came into Mafseket Carmelite, Beit Lan Ba. If you're going to say that, well, you have a Carmelite in between, so doesn't that help you out over here? So Amarova, Amavir Chefetz, Mitklat Arba, Lusof Arba, someone who moves an object from the beginning of four amot to the end of four amot, and even though he moves it through a location that is other than Reshut Rabim, he still will be chayav. So the way Rashi describes it is if a person picks up an object at one point, lifts it above 10 tefachim, and then brings it back down 4 amot away and places it down. So he's moved the object within Reshut Rabim 4 amot, which generally would be a chayuv chatat. But he did it by moving it over the 10 tefachim level, over the area that Reshut Rabim is considered, the height of Reshut Rabim's 10 tefachim, so he did it through a makom tour, and then puts it back down in Reshut Rabim. It was all in one motion. There was an akira and an anacha, but it passed through an area that was patur, or a makom tour in between. Despite that fact, what does Rava say? Chayav. So we see here, passing through an area that is not chayav does not necessarily help you, as long as you have the akira and anacha in locations that would cause you a problem. That's all that matters over here. So don't think that just because he passed through the Iskopa, that that's going to help. The Tosafot over here takes issue with Rashi's explanation, and he prefers the Ben Avichananel's explanation that he was passing it from hand to hand. Picked it up in his left hand, passed it to his right hand, and put it down. That was mean Derech Halav. Derech Halav means through him, through his body, that he moved. The Dalet Amot were not all about physically moving the himself or the object, but simply switching hands in between, which is that he can stretch his left hand all the way out and then pass it to his right hand, then stretch his right hand all the way out and get the four amot. But despite the fact that the majority of that was covered by his body itself and not through the Reshut Rabim, we still say you're chayav. The assumption would be that it's all you. There is an akira and there is an anacha, but most of the movement has to do with the extent of your body, from one side of your other body. You would think passing from your left hand to your right hand is not called being moved. Right? You would think an akira would need you to move your body physically. So he said here, we don't worry about that because we're talking about an iskopa aruka. It's a very long iskopa. This threshold is very long. Arohochi vehochi midgar. So what does a long iskopa do for you? It gives you time to remember it's Shabbos. Right? You just need to remember that it's Shabbat so that you don't carry that whole distance. It's an interesting. We generally don't have this concept in halacha. If you have enough time to remember, then we're not going to worry about it. So here, if we give you a little more time, it's a little further away, you'll remember it. So that's the first suggestion to solve this problem as to why we're not go there when it's less than four amot. The answer is it's an iskopa ruka. The time he gets from picking up in the Reshut Rabim, before he gets into the house, he'll remember that it's Shabbat. We're dealing with a regular threshold here. Who could pass up the opportunity to learn a little bit before they took it in? And therefore he's going to put it down. The likelihood of him moving from Reshut Rabim to Reshut Yachid without taking some time to read and learn some Torah, unlikely, and therefore we are pretty sure he's going to put it down in the iskopa. Who says that he's going to do his reading on the iskopa? Maybe he'll be so excited when he gets to the Reshut Rabim, he'll stop there, do his reading there, have an akira, and then by the time he's finished, he'll be so distracted, he'll walk straight into the Reshut Yachid. No stop then, because he's engrossed in his Torah. Hamani, who's the author of this position? Ben Azayi. Damar, Mehalech, Komei Dami. It's a problem. We'll just bring Ben Azayi in over here, who says that walking as if you are Oker Umeniach. Oker Umeniach. Instead of looking at walking as a continuum, which is a single akira when you start walking, and a single hanaka when you finish walking, he looks at it as discrete points along a continuum. And looking at discrete points, that means that every step, you are oker, umeniach, oker, umeniach. That means if you move from the Rishut Rabim to the Rishut Yachid through the Iskopa, it's as if you picked it up in the Rishut Rabim, put it down in the Iskopa, picked it up in the Iskopa, put it down in the Rishut Yachid, then you're only possibly in violation of a Derabbanan, not possibly in the violation of a Deoraita. So, Dilma Zorek Luhu, Mizrak, very interesting question. Maybe he'll throw it. They're so worried about the Kitvei HaKodesh, I'm not exactly sure how he's throwing the Kitvei HaKodesh over here. But let's assume maybe he'll throw it. If he throws it, then he's picking up Rishut HaBim, and now it's going to land in the Rishut HaYachid. Tam Rabbi Yochanan Mode Ben Azai Bezorek. Ben Azai agrees by throwing that we don't look at it that way. We had a machloket that we've seen before between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim, and whether Kluto Kemisha Unchodamyo, that when you're in motion, something is in motion in the air, do you look at that as a continuum or discrete points? And Rabbi Kiva says discrete points, Chachamim say that it is one continuum. So Ben Azai, who looks at walking as being an Akira and an Anacha, discrete points, still does not look at throwing as something that is discrete points, but rather a continuum. So that wouldn't be a problem, because if it's Ben Azai, then in throwing, this concept of discrete points won't help you. So why don't we worry about that? So Rav Acha bar Abba, Zotomeret, in Mizrakim, Kitvei HaKodesh. What a conclusion. From this you learn that you don't throw Kitvei HaKodesh. As if someone had the Havamina before that you would have thrown the Kitvei HaKodesh. I guess he's stating what is obvious is that you wouldn't throw Kitvei HaKodesh, so that's not the suspicion that we have over here. Seems to me a strange Havamina. Look, the Gemara is entertaining it, so I can't say that they didn't think of it or they didn't think that it was out of the realm of possibility, but it seems strange that they do entertain it, and the conclusion is what you would have expected, which is you don't throw Kitvei HaKodesh. Right. Aya Kore B'Rosh HaGag. He's reading up on the roof, so this is the latter half of the Mishnah, the Sefer of the Mishnah. There we had a three-way machloket again. We had the Tana Kama, who says it has to be above 10 tefachim off the ground for you to roll it back. For Rabbi Yehuda, it has to be melo achut, its strings worth off the ground. And for Rabbi Shimon, if it's on the ground, you can reel it back. Where it says, umishari, is this really mutar? About Tanya, kodvei sarim, tefillin, umizuzot. People who write, stam, write sifrei Torah, tefillin, umizuzot. Lo tir lehem, apecha yiriya apana. You're not allowed to turn over the cloth on its face. If you have to stop for whatever reason, you have to step out for whatever reason, you don't turn it over on its face to protect it. You put something on top of it. That's the proper conduct. That's the proper way to treat it. It's not to flip it on its face, but rather to cover it. Where it says, I don't understand. In our Mishnah, Rabbi Huda makes the suggestion that if it's more than lo chut, you flip it on its face and you leave it there. So why is that a better solution over here? Whereas, by the case of the Sofrei Stam, we don't let them do that. Mara says, no problem, haltam efshar, achalo efshar. Question of plausibility. As Rashi points out, over there it's efshar, over here it's not efshar. Shein lo beged lifros. Strange Rashi. Rashi says he doesn't have a beged. He doesn't have that option available to him. He didn't have a cloth that he can throw on the Kitvei HaKodesh, so that's why he flips over in space, according to Rabbi Yehuda. It's a strange way to come up with the problem here. Hacha efshar, achalo efshar, Tosafot says, why does he have to do that? I'll tell you the problem. Problem is, what happens if you want to put a cloth on top of it here? You're standing in Rishut Yachid. Where's your Kitvei HaKodesh now? It's sitting out in the Rishut Rabim. So the same way you have a problem with the guy rolling it back in to the Rishut Yachid from the Rishut Rabim, how are you going to allow him to throw a cloth out, even if he holds on to it, from the Rishut Yachid back out to the Rishut Rabim? It's just not feasible for us to allow him to do it one way and not the other way. He may as well roll it in then. He's going to throw the beged from his hand, hold on to it, and keep it over the Kitvei HaKodesh after the Rishut Rabim. He may as well just roll it back in. Why make him do that and not roll in the Kitvei HaKodesh? So because of that, it's lo efshar. That's what it means, lo efshar. Over here, we don't have that solution available to us. And that's why we say to him, flip it over on its face. But in general, the proper way to conduct oneself is to keep the tav open and to cover it over rather than flip it on its face. That's not on Shabbos. That's on a regular day. It's just a question of how we interact with Kitvei HaKodesh. What's the proper conduct when it comes to Kitvei HaKodesh? Now, let's go to Shabbat, where Rabbi Yehuda makes the suggestion of flipping on its face. Why is that his solution rather than covering it? The Gemara says, Yefshar. In our case, it's a case where it's just not possible to cover it over. Now, the idea of not flipping over its face might be twofold. One is because flipping on its face might actually cause problems with the Ktav itself. causing of the klaf to rub up against the ground, which can cause the ktav to be erased or cracked, can cause problems. So that's one issue of why not to flip it over its face, a practical issue. The second one is a bizayon issue, which is flipping over on its face is derech bizayon versus covering it over, putting a cloth on top of it, which is something that's more respectful, more kavod. So for both perspectives, both a practical perspective and a perspective bizayon, it makes more sense to cover it over in that manner. And that's how we would treat, or how we treat our Sefer Torah. When we want to do something, we cover the Sefer Torah on top. We place something on top of it. We don't flip it over on its face, you know, especially the Sfaradim. When they have the Sefer Torah, when they're open and standing to close it, they don't close the whole thing. They have a cloth that hangs from on top and they pull it down to hang over the Sefer Torah to cover it in those interim times that they don't want it to be open or that there's a delay. It's not clear. And from a practical standpoint, it's less of an issue. Again, the erasure of words is less likely to happen. Derech bizayon, it might be still derech bizayon, and so it might be better not to flip a sefer over in space, to turn them over to hold the place. It might be better to put a bookmark in there or to close them rather than flip them over in their face. It depends from which perspective you're looking at it. From a practical standpoint, I think it's less of an issue. From a bizayon standpoint, I think it still applies to Sfarim today, to Sidurim. I'm pretty sure that's the way the Shulchan Aruch paskens in Yerodea. So the alternative of leaving them open rather than flipping over its face is more problematic. There's more bizayon, or again, maybe more issue of them being destroyed if you don't turn them over. And that's why we say take the lesser evil here. The path of lesser evil is to flip it on its face and leave it face down rather than to leave it face up. Both from the tzad bizayon and from the practical side of it getting ruined, you're better off having it face down. So now he flips it on its ktav. The Gemara here wants to understand, why can't he roll it back? V'ha lo nach. It never landed. It never has anacha. According to both the Tana Kama and Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, it never lands in Rishut HaRabim. It's in the air. It's hanging. It's hanging off the ground. What's off the ground? What is the chashash here? It never lands in Rishut HaRabim, which means there never will be an akira on the way back. So why are you worried here? So Amar Rava, Bekotel Mishupa. We're dealing with a slanted roof. We're dealing where the area from where you're standing down to the ground has a slope to it. The wall is sloped. Ceiling, whatever is there is sloped downward. That means wherever it stops, as it comes down, it's hanging in the air. It's literally on top of something. Let's understand what you do with our Mishnah. Kotu Mishupa, you're dealing with this slanted wall. Even if it's mo'achut away from the ground, you bring it back to him. If you solve the problem for the Tana Kama about this 10 tefachim and you made it into a kotu mishupa, that means for Rabbi Yehuda you have the same solution. You have the same solution for Rabbi Yehuda, then why does Rabbi Yehuda allow you to bring it back from mo'achut? Why doesn't he have the same threshold as the Tana Kama? Which is, under 10 tefachim, you're in trouble, because then you're within the realm of Shut Rabim, and it's nach. When it says, chasurei mechsura, the Mishnah is actually missing some words to it. Vachiktani, and that's what it means. Vamed dvarim amurim. When is this true? Bikotu mishupa. That's only true when you're dealing with a wall that is slanted on an incline. Aval bikotel she'enu mishupa. If you have a wall that is straight, mala mishlosha golulo etzlo. Then if it's above 3 tefachim, you can roll it back. Less than 3, then you flip it on its face. Then Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, that even if it's a little bit off the ground, it's still problematic. Why? Because you need it to rest on something. So according to the Tana Kama, if there's a kotel mishupa, if you have a wall that's on an incline, then, once it goes down within 10 tefachim, that's the area of the Rishut HaRabim. You have a hanacha, because this is a slanted roof. And now you have a problem. We don't want you pulling it back to you. On the other hand, if it's a straight wall, then it doesn't have an hanacha until it reaches within 3 tefachim of the Rishut HaRabim. Once it's within 3 tefachim of the Rishut HaRabim, it's batel to the karka. It's as if landed in the Rishut HaRabim. That's the Tana Kama's position. Along comes Rabbi Yehuda and says, no. Even within 3 tefachim, when it's a straight wall, it's not considered to be anacha, because you need it to be munach agabe mashu. We don't have this idea in hanacha of a theoretical hanacha, or as if munach. It literally has to get onto something or land on something. Here it's suspended within three tefachim of the ground, even though normally three tefachim is lavud, or three tefachim is considered to be part of the shetarbim. That's not the case over here. Over here, within three tefachim, it's still in the air. Because, and that's what the Gemara just said, binyan anacha al gabi mashu. Ve'lo ala damai rova tok shlusha l'rabanan tzarich anacha. Lema kitanei. The rabbi has a statement that we've seen before, which is that according to the Rabbanan, within three tefachim is not sufficient to have anacha. Hanacha has to be that it lands literally on the ground. Can't simply be that it's within three tefachim of the ground. So now, that should be a machloket tanaim, his statement. That's a machloket tanaim in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah has a machloket between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda as to whether you really need hanacha. Is within three tefachim okay, or do you really need hanacha? That's the difference in opinion between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda. So then, lema ketanei amra d'shmaitei, that his memra is really a machloket tanaim. Ela kula Rabbi Yehuda hi. Right, so now we're on our third attempt to amend the Mishnah to understand. So now the whole thing is Rabbi Yehuda. Chasurei mechzer, and again the Mishnah is missing some key words, which are afiktani. Bamed dvarim amurim bekoto mishupa. Bekoto shein mishupa, afilu pachot mishlosha tefachim galulo etzlo. That is when it's a koto mishupa. But if it's not a koto mishupa, even less than three tefachim galulo etzlo, shit, Rabbi Yehuda omer. Because this is the position of Rabbi Yehuda, afilu eni musulak menaretz el moachut galulo etzlo. Well, you can roll it to him, my taima, t'vina nacha, gabi mashu. Now we have eliminated the Tanakama being involved in this at all. Which is, the Tanakama has an opinion, and his opinion has to do with koto mishupa. Then, Rabbi Yehuda comes along and says, that's v'med dvarim amurim, that's in kotel mishupa. But, in a koto yashir, then even within three tefachim of the ground, it doesn't matter, you need it to get down below the mlo'achut, you need to get it down to the ground, until it gets down to the ground, you can roll it back to you. That means that Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakam are not even arguing. There's no argument between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda. Tanakam is speaking about koto mishupa, Rabbi Yehuda is speaking about koto yashir. They're speaking apples and oranges, and they're not arguing. Now Rabbi Shimon is arguing on Rabbi Yehuda, because he says even in koto yashir, if it lands on the ground, you can roll it back to you. It's very interesting now, because you've eliminated that machlok between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda in order, basically, to protect Rava. Because Rava's statement, we don't want it to be a machloket Tanaim, we want it to have support of all the Tanaim, and in doing so, we have to eliminate the machloket between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda. Alright, next Mishnah. Ziz shelifnei achalon. You have some projection, something that comes out of the side of the wall that's in front of a window. Notanim alav. Venotlim imenu b'shabbat. Yes, it's similar to a window sill here. You can place things on it on Shabbat, and you can bring them in on Shabbat. So it's boleit min hakotel, six out of the wall. The assumption here is that it's more than 10 tefachim high, and it's 4x4. So you have a reshut yachid here. It's a pure reshut yachid, so your house is reshut yachid, inside the windows is reshut yachid. You can move objects back and forth from this projection, this extension of the wall, back into your house, because it's moving from reshut yachid to reshut yachid. So Gemara says, hai ziz te mapik teheicha. Wait a minute. Where exactly is this item projecting over? We know that inside the house, that's a reshut yachid. We know the object, the ziz itself, is a reshut yachid. But what's down below? What's under it down below? Ilei min demapik l'reshut rabim, that it projects over a reshut rabim, it extends over a reshut rabim. L'chol shtum anofil v'atil yituye. Why don't we worry about it falling off this projection, this extension out over the reshut rabim? Very likely that it would fall off. Things could fall off. And then what are you going to do? You're going to go down, bring it back into the house. Shud Rabim to Shud Yachid, we have a problem. Ela, the Meipik L'Rishut Yachid. Wow, that's extending over a Rishut Yachid. Pshita, then what are you worried about? Even if it falls down into the Rishut Yachid below, you carry it into the house. Rishut Yachid to Rishut Yachid, we don't have a problem with that. Amar, Abaye, Olam, the Meipik L'Rishut Rabim. No, it's extended over Rishut Rabim. Minot, Nina Lav Diktani. What does it mean that you can place objects on there? Kelim, Anish Barim. Only fragile objects are you allowed to place out there. Fragile objects, why? Because if they fall, it's hasta la vista. You aren't going to go get them. They're gone. You put glass things out on this projection. If they fall, that's the end of those objects. So we don't worry about you bringing it in anymore because the objects don't exist after they fall. So you can use it for these fragile objects because we know then that we don't have a cheshesh that you're bringing them back in. The bottom line is that if they fall, there's no reason to, right, there's no reason to bring them back in once they fall. So you're only going to be utilizing this. Exactly on this projection, nowhere else. Because if they do fall down, they won't be around anymore. Tanya Nami Yochi. We have a braita that supports the ziz shlifnei achron. Yotzeh the reshut harabim that projects or extends over reshut harabim. Nodim alav, you can place on top of it kiarot, vikosot, kaitoniot, utzlochiot. You can place on top of them these dishes, saucers, pitchers, cups, goblets, ladles, bottles, flasks. Umishtamesh b'chol hakotel ad asarat tachtonim. You can use the entire wall up to 10 tefachim off the ground. V'yish ziz echad lamata mimenu. If he has another projection under it, mishtamesh po, you can use it. U'b'elyon ein mishtamesh po, but the upper one he can't use. Ela keneged chalono, except opposite the window. All right, this is a big brayta. We have to just understand what is going on here. The brayta was brought in order to support our understanding of the Mishnah, which is number one, this projection is over Rishut Rabim, which is stated explicitly in the brayta. And number two is that we're only utilizing it with fragile objects, which are here mentioned in the Mishnah, which are items that could be fragile objects. It doesn't have to be fragile objects. Rashi says these items that are mentioned here are stam kli cheres, that the default status of these items is made out of earthenware, and so therefore they are fragile objects. And so based on this brayta, we found support for our understanding of the Mishnah. So that part of the brayta is fine, and that's why we brought it. But the brayta made additional statements here that need to be clarified. The first one is that you can use the entire wall up to within 10 tefachim of the ground. Below 10 tefachim is going to be a problem of Rishut Rabim, because you're over Rishut Rabim. Within 10 tefachim of the ground is Rishut Rabim. Above that area is considered to be a Rishut Yachid, and that's why you can utilize the area above to move it in and out of the window to those areas. That's number one. That part we kind of understand. The next piece is more difficult, which is, if I have one Ziz Lamata, I can use it. And when we say you can use it, Rashi says here, this is a Ziz that extends across the whole wall. The Ziz like a platform, a shelf that's across the entire wall. So you can utilize, even though it's not directly opposite the window, you can reach out to the right, you can reach out to the left, you can reach down below you. Any of those are fine. But if the brayta says you have ziz echad lamato, one down below, and then you have the one on top, then the one on top, emishtamish bo keneged chalono. You can only use the part that is opposite the window. That's what's going to present us with the difficulty. Why can you only use it as opposite the window? What's different about the elyon versus the tachton? Rashi explains, which I said here, now we're talking about a shelf all the way along. Just want to note here that the Reed disagrees with Rashi and says we're not talking about shelves here. But the ziz, what we're talking about here are holes, chorim in the wall. Holes in the wall. So holes in the wall, we've seen before. If you have holes in the wall that are opposite Rishut Rabim, they're called chorei Rishut Rabim, and they are like part of Rishut Rabim. You have holes in the wall that are opposite Rishut Yachid, they're considered like Rishut Yachid. So that means the holes in the wall that are above 10 tefachim are Rishut Yachid, and that's why you can use them. The holes below 10 tefachim are chorei Rishut Rabim, and that's why you cannot utilize them. So the Reed reads it as chorim in the wall, rather than these shelves that are projecting out. It comes out to be the same thing in the end. It's just a difference of whether the area is extending outwards or is inside of the wall itself. Aziz echidami. What exactly is this projection that's coming out over here? Itale le arba'a. If it's not 4x4 tefachim, makom pturu. Then it's a makom ptur. V'afil keneged chalono nami lo yishtamesh. Then you can't even use it opposite your window, which is interesting because we know that when something is a makom ptur, that you're free to move back and forth between from Rishut Rabim to a Makom Tur or back, or from Makom Tur to Rishut Yachid, as long as you don't go between the two. But Makom Tur generally is allowed to be utilized. Why is over here, do we say a Makom Tur, you're not allowed to move back and forth or place things in there? And Rashi says over here, Vafilu keneged chalono lo lishtamesh, nehi de Makom Turu, umutar lekatef alav. We know from before in the Gemara, you're allowed to rest. When you're walking in Rishut Rabim, you're allowed to rest objects on the Makom Tur, even though you're moving from Rishut Rabim into the Makom Tur. Either side can utilize it because it's a makom tur, as long as they don't pass things back and forth. Miu, tashmish tadir lo mishtari be. What they did not allow was frequent or regular utilization of such a place. Rashi kind of mixes and messes with two things here. He first says that it has to do with the frequency of utility, which is that in a case where people are resting their objects in Rishut Rabim, that's a temporary thing, it happens on occasion, and so that we allow you to do. But if you're going to regularly move things from Rishut Rabim to the Makom Patur, that we're not going to allow. That might have been sufficient in and of itself. But then Rashi adds in an additional perspective, which is, the area is so small that the likelihood of something falling off of it is very high. So not only is it going to be frequent usage, but it's also going to be frequent usage with a high likelihood that it's going to fall off of this projection and land in the Rishut Rabim. So why do we worry about that? We already established that our mission is talking about a case of Kelim and Ishbarim. Okay, you regularly want to use this small area that has a high likelihood that things are going to fall on the ground. That's your choice. You're going to put fragile items out there. We don't have any chashash. You're going to bring them back in from down below. They're not going to be there. If you don't mind losing your kelim, then why not use it? So he says, that's only when it's 4x4, when it's reshut yachid, it's not going to fall. In this case, where a majority of the objects you put on there are going to fall to reshut rabim, it's equivalent of throwing them out into the reshut rabim. So it's going to look like you're actually trying to throw them in that, from the reshut yachid to reshut rabim, because you're placing them there knowing that there's a high percentage chance that that will be down in the reshut rabim afterwards. So it's a way to throw out the reshut rabim without looking like you're throwing out to the reshut rabim. So Rashi, with that extended statement, says the reason that Makom Tuhir cannot be utilized is because Makom Tuhir here is different than what we've seen before. So Gemara says, okay, if it's a Makom Tuhir, you won't be able to use it at all. That means even opposite the window. So what's the case here? V'idit be'arba'a, if it's four tefachim by four tefachim, which makes it into a reshut yachid, b'kulei akota lishtamish, you can use the whole wall. Why should only be connected chalono that he can use it? Not on the sides of the wall. Gemara says, "Amrabai, tachton deit be arba'a." The lower projection itself has four tefachim. That means the entire shelf, or considered to be a full-fledged reshut yachid across the entire stretch of the projection. And that's why I utilize it. Velyon, let the arba'a. The upper one does not have four tefachim. Well, doesn't have four tefachim. Why can you use it at all? That's what we just said before. It's a makom tor. Even opposite the window, you can't use it. V'chalon mashlimato l'dalet. But the windowsill now makes it into a full four tefachim. So you think about a shelf that is across the window, in front of the window. So that which is directly in front of the window, it's less than four tefachim, but together with the windowsill, it will add up to four tefachim. Now you have a four tefachim shelf. To the right and to the left of the window, you just have the shelf, which is less than four tefachim. It's a makom tor. We just said you're not allowed to utilize a makom tor hanging over the reshut rabim. So that's why the Braita says, opposite the window you can utilize it, because there you have four tefachim, you have reshut yachid. To the sides, you cannot use it because you don't have the requisite four tefachim to make it into a reshut yachid. And that's what Abayi says over here, keneged ha'chalon mishtamesh, dechorei chalon hu, becomes like a hole of the window. Dechorei chalon hu is a lashon mush'al, it's a borrowed term. Chorei means something that's the extension of a larger area. Chorei reshut rabim are the extension of the reshut rabim, there have to be holes there. Chorei reshut yachid, an extension of the reshut yachid. So here when it says chorei chalon, it doesn't necessarily literally mean the whole of the window. It just means that it's an extension of the window. Extension of the reshut yachid of the window. But the haigisa, that which is to the right and that which is to the left, not opposite the window, those are not extensions of the window, and therefore they're less than four tefachim, makom tor, which we said you're not allowed to utilize. The Braita has two pieces to it, that's why. The Braita says, "Umishtamish b'chol kotel ad asarat tachtonim," that you can utilize the wall down to the lower 10 tefachim. Then, "im yesh ziz echad amata imenu ubelyon," then it's talking about ziz. It specifically goes back to ziz, so you're back to a shelf. So the Ri will agree that the latter half of the Braita is clearly going about a shelf, but the middle section is talking about churim, differing with Rashi in this issue. Now, the Ri has a slightly different reading of this Gemara, and he disagrees with Rashi's approach to when it's four tefachim or less than four tefachim. According to Rashi, less than four tefachim is a makom ptur, and you can't place anything on there. Once you reach four tefachim, then you can place kelim and nishbarim. The Ri, on the other hand, believes that if it's already up to four tefachim, you can place on there any kelim that you like. There is no restriction. Less than four tefachim, then you can only place on it kelim and nishbarim. And why doesn't it set up our mission in a case where it's arba tefachim? Because our Mishnah says ziz, and a stam ziz is a koshu. Because of that, it has to explain that that's talking about a case of kelim and nishbarim. Then when the Gemara asks, when you have the platform that goes in front of the window, then if it's less than four, afilu lifnei achalon, even in front of the chalon, you can't even use it in front of the window, that's because you can't answer that this is talking about kelim and nishbarim. Because if it was talking about kelim and nishbarim, there would be mutar even on the sides of the window, because that's less than four tefachim. So that can't be the answer here. We have to come up with another solution that allows us to put kelim there that wouldn't be allowed on the side. And that's what the Gemara says in the end, that it's including the window sill, it's more than four tefachim. For the Ri, means you can put any type of keli on it. But that's not true with the shelf to the side, because the shelf to the side is less than four tefachim. And on that, you could only put kelim nishbarim, but not regular kelim. And that's where the Braita is speaking about regular kelim, on a case where the window sill and the ledge are four tefachim, so you can use it. Whereas those to the side are less than four tefachim, where you cannot utilize it. Omed adam b'shut yachid, umitotel b'shut rabim. A person can stand in b'shut yachid, lean out his window and move something in the reshut rabim. Bishut Rabim, you can stand in Bishut Rabim, lean into the house through the window, and metaltel Bishut Yachid, move things around. Uvad, shel yitzi, chutz mi'arba amot. As long as he doesn't move the object more than 4 amot, obviously the problem being that if he moves it 4 amot in Rishut Rabim, he's carrying 4 amot in Rishut Rabim. As an Akira and Achan, Rishut Rabim will be a problem. Lo yamod adam Bishut Yachid, biyashtin Rishut Rabim. A person cannot stand in the private domain and then urinate out to the Rishut Rabim. Bi Rishut Rabim, he can't stand in Rishut Rabim and biyashtin Rishut Yachid and then urinate into the Rishut Yachid. V'chein lo yarok, he cannot spit. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af mishin flash wukol b'fiv, as soon as the saliva detaches, you have something more solid in your mouth, then lo yalech arba amot ad shiruk. He shouldn't walk 4 amot until you remove that spittle that you have in your mouth, because it's no longer now considered to be batel to the goof, because it's taken on properties that make it separate from the goof. It's something that's more solid, something in your mouth that you're going to dispose of. So if you're going to do that already, it becomes the equivalent of chewing gum or sucking a candy, which is you have something in your mouth, and if you're going to move 4 amot, you're going to have a problem. So get rid of it before you continue to walk. So matnei lai Rav Chinin Rav Shlomaya lechia barav. He was telling over this Mishnah to lechia barav, kamed rav, but in front of Rav. So he's teaching Rav's son, or mentioning it to Rav's son in front of Rav. And this is the way he quotes it. Lo yamod adam b'rishut yachid umetatel b'rishut rabim. Person shouldn't stand in b'rishut yachid and then carry in b'rishut rabim, which is the opposite of our Mishnah. So he's saying over our Mishnah, but with the opposite position. Amalei shafakta rabbanon v'avad k'rabbi meir. He dropped the Rabbanon and picked up Rabbi Meir over here. The Rabbanon are the authors of our Mishnah. Rabbi Meir, according to Rashi's, Rabbi Meir shows up in a couple of Mishnayot, which says that you're not allowed to move your key from within the Rishut Rabim to open up a lock in the Rishut Rabim. You're not allowed to move it within the Rishut Rabim. So if Rabbi Meir says, we don't allow you this dispensation when you are in one Rishut to carry in the other Rishut, whereas the Chachamim say yes, so it's Chachamim versus Rabbi Meir. Why are you picking Rabbi Meir versus the Chachamim? When it says, Husavar ben Sefer Rabbi Meir, he thinks because this Mishnah upcoming, I mean, it's a little bit, a couple of Mishnah over now, is Rabbi Meir, Reisha Nami Rabbi Meir, that the whole thing is Rabbi Meir. So the whole thing is Rabbi Meir, then this, our Mishnah then becomes a Dat Yachid. Now even though Rabbi Meir later on says you can't do it, and our Mishnah here says you can do it, what you're going to have to say is that you're michalek between those two cases, the case for the key and the case over here.
He prefers the second Mishnah.
Not that he prefers it, he just says that since that Mishnah says Divrei Rabbi Meir, Divrei Rabbi Meir goes back on the entire series of Mishnayot over here. It's not just the last Mishnah, but the whole series of Mishnayot over here. If that's the case, then the reason he didn't pass on like our Mishnah is because he thinks it's the Dat Yachid and the Rabbanon argue on him. Where it says, Velohi, Sefer Rabbi Meir, Reishu the Rabbanon. That part is Rabbi Meir. This part is the Rabbanon, and therefore he's passing against the Rabbanon, which shouldn't be the case. Now, Tosafot already asks about this. He says, Perisha Kundris, that we're talking about this Rabbi Meir later on. It's a little question, a little bit questionable. It's too far away. That Mishnah, I told you, is a couple of Mishnayot away from here. It's not exactly nearby. It seems too far away. Near the reed, the Seifa, the Lo Yashtin, the Lo Yarok, the Poligale Rabbi Yehuda, where Rabbi Yehuda argues over here, V'stam bar plukta to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir. So that's what he says. Who's then normally the person who is the opposing figure when you have a machloka between Rabbi Yehuda and someone? It's either Rabbi Yossi or Rabbi Meir. So the assumption being here that it's Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Yehuda is the latter half of the Mishnah, that Rabbi Meir is the author of this Mishnah. It says, V'miyokash, imkein avalei de mifrach, tami gemara, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Meir. If that's the case, then you really should have brought a stira later on in the gemara between Rabbi Meir here and Rabbi Meir later on, because Rabbi Meir's opinion later on does not necessarily reconcile over here, and the Gemara never asked that question. The Gemara later on talks about who really is the author here. If we can flip around the Mishnah between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, maybe that's why the Gemara doesn't ask between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Meir. But in the end, Tosfot leans a little bit against Rashi because of the fact that Divrei Rabbi Meir is too far away in the Mishnah, but it's not so simple, his explanation either. Okay, we'll stop over here.